The question of how this moment is different is relevant to a lot of Americans who may or may not identify as people of color. June is Pride Month, when the LGBTQ community looks back at where we've been and where we're headed. For some, that story is pretty intimately connected to what's happening in Michigan streets right now. Erin Knott is executive director at Equality Michigan. She's been busy with her work on the Kalamazoo City Commission as well. She recently wrote a letter reminding the community that Pride began as a riot at Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. She joins us now. Erin, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me on today.
And Selma Tucker's here. He's working on the campaign to update Michigan's Elliot Larson law. He works at Public Sector Consultants in Lansing. Selma, welcome back.
Nice to talk to you as well, April.
Erin Knott, in the words of one mailing from Equality Michigan, the first Pride was a riot. As much as we've come to identify June as the moment for Target and Starbucks to roll out their rainbow gear, can you remind us why it is that we mark this time in June and why it might have some resonance with what people are experiencing right now?
I mean, as you just said, we think of Pride these days as synonymous with rainbow-saturated celebrations across the LGBTQ community, and it's far too easy to forget its solemn origins. And in fact, Pride, the first Pride, was a riot. The LGBTQ civil rights movement was born when Black and brown trans women had had enough of police raids and brutality that resulted in a clash between police and protesters outside of the Stonewall Inn. These acts of resistance, riots, and rebellions were in direct response to the anger boiling over against a system that devalued and erased LGBTQ lives. And that is the origin of Pride.
I just wanted to ask how you both are doing right now. I mean, this is just a very intense time. Erin Knott, what's going on with you? Have you been able to stay safe during the pandemic?
Yes, I've been able to stay safe. Our team has been able to stay safe. However, we've had to adapt. We're now organizing, educating, mobilizing, and supporting our greater community from makeshift offices across the state, whether that's from our living rooms or our dining room tables. We have not continued to stop fighting for equity and justice on behalf of the LGBTQ community.
Selma Tucker, this year, as we imagined it, among other things, political organizing just looks so much different. How are things going with you?
Well, I can tell you personally, I'm really tired. It's been an incredibly difficult year, and it's been really difficult to watch our country sort of devolve, quite frankly, into a really, really balkanized place, into a place where our divisions are what we're seeing first, into a place where we're not talking to each other, we're talking past each other, and we're really interested in scoring sort of political points over making substantive sort of having substantive policy discussions. So this year has been really, really difficult, but I can tell you that I'm also very energized by what I'm seeing out there in my home community in Grand Rapids and communities throughout the country, where organizations and individual people are sort of waking up, if they weren't there before, are sort of waking up and saying, whoa, something is amiss here. The earth is literally moving beneath our feet, and we need to figure out why that's happening. And that is going to require a lot of close examination and reflection. But what I do see is that there does seem to be a difference between today and when we've had these discussions in the past. So I'm hoping that that leads to a lot of optimism in the future.
Selma, what do you attribute that change to?
I attribute that change to, frankly, a sort of a boiling point. You know, a pot of water doesn't get to boiling without several minutes, without a lengthy period of time where it starts from cold and it gets to hot. And that's where we are. We are in a very, very hot spot right now, and it's exacerbated by, frankly, the leadership that we have. People talk about leadership in really sort of amorphous and general terms, and the fact of the matter is that leadership does mean something, and leadership looks at where an organization is at and says, what can we do? What can we do to make it better for the people who work or live or sustain inside of this organization? And I think that there are some leaders that aren't asking that question. Some leaders are asking, how do we use this to help us with our next quarter earnings statement? Or how do we use this to help us with our election that's coming up? And those are questions that I don't think are needed right now. And so I think that we're just in this boiling point where people have found themselves really wanting to act, after seeing a shock. They've sort of been shocked out of complacency. There's a lightning bolt that happened in television and in Twitter, where the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor are just, they're just, they've reached a tipping point where, you know, and it to me in a modern history, it seems like it started with Trayvon Martin. And that was 7 or 8 years ago. And we've been dealing with this for so long. And so George Floyd death has really just been a serious, serious catalyst.
Aaron Knott, I wonder, this is such a harrowing but important moment for people whose activism focuses on equity and healthcare, for people whose activism focuses on Black Lives Matter. What does it mean to keep a sense of intersectionality and to keep LGBTQ activism in mind in this moment?
So as I said previously, the LGBTQ community knows about the work of resisting police brutality and violence. Again, we're celebrating Pride Month because it commemorates in part our resisting police harassment and brutality at the Stonewall in New York City. We understand what it means to rise up and push back against a culture that tells us we are less than and that our lives do not matter. Equality Michigan has been adopting intersectionality as a core value, and we are committed to becoming more diverse, equitable, and inclusive. But this moment requires that we go further and that we make explicit commitments to embrace anti-racism and end white supremacy, not only across Michigan, but across the United States. This is an integral to the objective of full equality for all LGBTQ people.
Can you say more about what it looks like? I mean, I feel like the LGBTQ movement, if anything, that was one of the first places I heard the word intersectionality mentioned, with an acknowledgement that greater equality had different meanings for, say, a gay white male than it would for a trans Black woman, for example.
Yes. You know, you mentioned trans Black women. We have an epidemic of violence experienced by our Black and Brown community members, especially the killings of transgender people, Black transgender women in particular. In 2019, there were at least 26 deaths of transgender people due to fatal violence. And sadly, so far here in 2020, we've already seen at least 12 transgender people fatally shot or killed. So, you know, as we celebrate Pride, albeit, again, it looks different this year, we're making sure that we're lifting up Black and Brown voices in our virtual celebrations, in our education work, and that we come to the table to listen and follow the lead of Black and Indigenous people of color in our community.
Today, we're having a conversation with Aaron Knott of Equality Michigan and Selma Tucker of Public Sector Consultants. He's been working on the ballot question drive to have civil rights protections expanded in Michigan to the LGBTQ community. Selma, you're in the position of experiencing this moment, both as a gay man and as a gay American and as a Black American. Is there anything particular that strikes you about this moment in activism?
There is, and it is incredible. This whole thing is incredibly personal for me. And one of the things that, and I'm so happy that you were deciding to make it, having a conversation around the intersectionality of LGBT issues and Black issues, because that's not an overlap that we hear a whole ton about. And it strikes me because as a gay man, we've made pretty good progress. If you had asked me when I was a teen if we would have marriage equality in my lifetime, I would have told you no. And that's different. I was wrong. And thank goodness I was wrong. And the reason that we were able to make that sort of accelerated progress is because of the good work that Equality Michigan, organizations like Equality Michigan HRC are doing. But it also is because there was individual action on behalf of mothers and fathers, aunts and uncles, teachers, friends and family who said, you know what, I'm going to take a closer look at this issue because there are people in my own life for whom I did not fully understand. I didn't know what they went through. I had a conversation recently with a contractor who was in my home, and he was talking about how his son is gay and that he didn't know how hard a time he was having. And he thought that his father would reject him, and come to find out that this person was suffering, that this child, his own child, was suffering from thoughts of suicide, was having a really, really difficult time finding his place in the world. And this father looked at me and said, I couldn't believe that in my own home, my child was suffering from something that I didn't even understand. My child was suffering from something that I was perpetuating with jokes, or where we're in church and they hear something that makes them feel like they're less than what they are, where they're in school and they're bullied. These things, now we have a term for them. They're called microaggressions, and sometimes they're straight up aggressions, but those aggressions add up to something. And I think that that is a helpful starting place for a lot of people who may be asking themselves, like, you know, I hear these Black folk just running around and they seem to be so upset. And I frankly don't get it. Maybe I'm a working class person and I have a difficult time too. And I think my life is hard, but like, why don't they just work harder? Well, we learned something from the LGBT movement. We've learned something from all of these movements, from the civil rights movement, from getting the Voting Rights Act signed and getting the Civil Rights Act signed, is that it took people waking up and seeing the injustices that were happening at a macro level and across the country, but also the injustices that were happening inside of their home. That there are people who are inside of our home, in the case of LGBT folks, there are people who are inside of our home for whom we have not fully seen, and we didn't understand their struggles. But now that we do, we know better and we can do better. At least that's the hope. And I think that that's where the LGBT movement and the Black Lives Matter movement, these things have such significant overlap, and they can learn from each other. And that's what intersectionality is about. So it is very personal. And I do think that at the end of the day, in order to find equality for our brothers and sisters of color, it is an individual and a personal discussion and reflection that we're going to have with ourselves, as well as policy changes, both at the local, state, and federal level.
Aaron, do you feel like there are things that you've learned or that Equality Michigan has learned about LGBTQ advocacy from the civil rights movement?
You know, absolutely. In terms of going into different communities come with different opportunities and challenges. And so it's not a one size fits all when it comes to organizing. Listening to our trans advocate, Janice Poindexter, talking about the fact that, you know, she's been participating in several Black Lives Matters protests and sit-ins in the greater Detroit area. And there's still a deep divide within the community as it relates to the movement and lifting up the voices of transgender women. And so we did a brainstorming session to figure out how we can support that particular community and make sure that those voices are lifted up within the greater Black Lives Matters movement that's ongoing right now across the state and across the country.
And Selma, I hear what you're saying, that there may definitely be psychological touchstones that might be useful, you know, looking at the way the LGBTQ movement kind of turned things around in Michigan, you know, from a point at which voters were willing to sanction gay marriage to a point where they were willing to uphold it.
Yeah.
I wonder, though, given the way that most people live in such self-segregated worlds right now, do you think it's possible for, you know, maybe people in communities where there aren't that many African Americans to latch on to this issue through personal stories?
Yeah, I think that so there are significant and deep overlapping issues with LGBT women's rights, Black rights, rights for Latinx and our and Latino community. These are all very significant. The overlaps are serious and they're there. But it's also worth noting that the roots of racism are deep, right? The roots of racism go back to the founding of the country. And it's 400 years that we've been dealing with this. And it's not to suggest that the roots of homophobia and anti-LGBT are not deep, but the system that is created to maintain the status quo that we have for, particularly for people of color, is really, really, really big. And so when we ask the question around how do these things overlap and how are they different, some of the things that are different is that you know, LGBT is based on who you are. You can be born gay or not gay. You can be born trans or not trans, or you can have, as we know with fluidity and gender, is you can identify as someone who is neither male or female. And these are issues of genetics and where you're born. But when it comes to race, we self-segregate in really significant ways. So if you look at where you live, if you are a white person and you are living in a place that's very, very homogenous, and you're not getting inputs from people of color, if the only inputs from people of color you're getting are, you know, one or two folks at work that you see, or what you see in television and what you see that's fed to you through the media, then you're missing out on a perspective that is going to help inform the way that you see the world. And the decision around where we live is a very, very personal decision. But that personal decision has significant ramifications for the broader community. And that's why this issue is so significant and entrenched and really perplexes the mind, because we have to do individual work, but there's also systemic policy work that goes along with it. They work hand in hand. And so that's why these moments where we're awakening and we're seeing this flash of lightning and we're responding to them, we're starting to see that our individual actions have contributions to the nullification of Black lives and have consequences to our children who are growing up LGBT and having a really, really difficult time with it. So those individual decisions mean something, and they also add up to really, really systemic environment in which it makes it very, very hard for people of color or LGBT people to find happiness and to find success and to find productivity in an authentic way.
If you're just joining us, we're having a Pride Month conversation with Selma Tucker of Public Sector Consultants in Lansing and with Aaron Knott, the Executive Director at Equality Michigan Education Fund. As if there weren't enough going on right now, a lot of the more joyous side of Pride Month celebrations and commemorations are not happening because of physical distancing. I was thinking of the parades and other places where people and their families gather. I was just going to ask if there is a way that each of you are marking Pride Month right now, given the restrictions that we're all dealing with. Aaron, do you want to start?
Sure. I mean, Pride looks different this year, but it doesn't mean that we're any less prideful. And so for Equality Michigan, you know, as a team and as individuals, we have leaned into the opportunity of the virtual prides that occurred. So as an example, Motor City Pride was virtual last Saturday. And Janie's Point Dexter was a host and hosted that event from 3 p.m. on, again, last Saturday. We recorded a video. We're doing a number of live at lunch events where we're connecting with different leaders in the grassroots via Facebook to talk to folks. And we're leaning into the public education work that we need to be doing. As you're well aware, in Michigan, you can still be fired or denied housing or service because of who you are and whom you love. And this is a fact that's been exacerbated by the current coronavirus pandemic. So while we're not out on the streets and in parks across the state of Michigan, there's plenty of opportunity to be doing the work and to continue to do movement building and building power at the local level. And so, again, we're taking this as an opportunity, although it feels very different. We owe it to our community to continue on.
Selma, how about yourself?
I totally agree. Those virtual pride meetings are really important, and we have to be participating in them, and we have to still be coming together as a community. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that June is also in a really beautiful dovetail is that this is also Juneteenth. And June 19 is the celebration of the Emancipation Proclamation when slaves were freed in this country. And I think it's beautiful that they're both in the exact same month. And it really speaks to the heart of this conversation, where Black issues and LGBT issues are overlapping, and they can use each other as leverage points to make progress. And because we both want the exact same thing.
It's nice to know that joy can still be a thing out there in spite of everything that's going on right now. So, Selma Tucker, to your point that those personal stories really can be a cornerstone for a different kind of understanding and for change. I mean, let's say I'm sitting at home right now seeing these protests on my phone and trying to think about an intersectional approach. What do you do?
Yeah. I think the first thing that you do is you step back and you reflect on your own actions. You see something that's wrong. You see an injustice with George Floyd, and you know that that is completely wrong. I mean, you don't have to be a deep philosopher to know that what George Floyd experienced is wrong, and you are rightfully outraged by that. But I would ask you to also reflect on how you process things in our past. Look at Colin Kaepernick and ask yourself, were you sort of brought in? How were you brought in on that conversation? Were you seduced by the idea that Colin Kaepernick's protest was anathema to the flag? Did you sort of buy into this idea that somehow what Colin Kaepernick was doing had anything to do with disrespect to veterans? And see how that conversation got spun. See how you were brought along in that conversation. Because Colin Kaepernick's protest looks very different today than it did a year ago. And we see the NFL commissioners coming out and saying, we were wrong about that. We were wrong about Colin Kaepernick's protest. And what Colin Kaepernick was talking about was a warning sign to us. And it was a warning sign that, frankly, so many of us chose to ignore. And that's what my father did, who's an evangelical preacher. I grew up in a Pentecostal home. And he went back after I came out and he reflected on the things that he did and said and the environments that he put me in when I was growing up. And when he understood better, that reflection led him down a path where he could love his son and still love his faith. And those are journeys that are deeply personal. And I would ask anyone who is making decisions on a daily basis, what can you do? How can you raise your level of awareness so that we don't give cover to people who mean ill towards our Black brothers and sisters and other people of color? We all have a personal responsibility there.
Aaron Knott, I just wanted to ask you to just further this point a little bit. What do you say to people who are trying to get at the points of disagreement on LGBTQ rights without sort of stepping back into a this side says this and that side says that, a sort of binary argument?
You know, I think that right now, because our nation has plunged into a crisis, right? We're gripped by disease, unemployment, and the outrage at the police. This has been the conversation as of late. How do we come together as a broader community? When it comes to matters such as modernizing the state civil rights law, known as Elliott-Larsen, so that we're explicitly including sexual orientation and gender identity, the conversations that I've had in the past, you know, gets at that nobody should be left out and everybody should be included as it relates to those most basic protections. And that then begins a story, a conversation as it relates to the impact on not only the individual, but local communities when somebody is fired because of who they are or whom they love. I discuss frequently the impact of trans women that can't find housing or lose housing because of who they are. And when you, again, share those stories and personalize it, because we know that the vast majority of Michiganders and the country is on the side of fully inclusive, equal rights for all. It's about making a connection and taking those folks that are still not completely on board and taking them through the journey and again making a human connection for them to realize that they have a friend, a neighbor, or possibly a loved one that is part of the LGBTQ community, and they should be afforded the same basic rights as everyone else.
Aaron Knott is the executive director at the Equality Michigan Education Fund. We've also been talking with Selma Tucker of Public Sector Consultants in Lansing. He's actually been talking to us from his home in Grand Rapids. Selma, Aaron, it's really good talking to you. You guys both take care. Happy Pride Month, and thanks for your time today.